Would you please join me in Genesis chapter number 24 as we look at the next part of the story of Abraham and Isaac and eventually Jacob, the namesakes of the patriarchs of the Jewish faith and therefore of our own Christian faith? The story is anchored with the death of Sarah in the 136th year that Abraham and Sarah, not the 136th year of them being in the land, but the 136th year of Abraham's life. He says goodbye to his soulmate. And then I believe, and this is my opinion, but I think it's got good indications within the text itself. I think Abraham descends into a deep blue funk. He gets very depressed, even clinically depressed, and he is convinced that he is not going to live long enough to see his son Yitzhak get married. But that needs to happen. He needs to get married. And so Abraham decides that he's got to get his most trusted senior servant to promise him in the name of God to get that taken care of. So here's the text. Genesis 24, verse 1. Now Abraham was old, well advanced in years. And as I already said, we're talking about him being in his later 130s. And the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. So he's extremely wealthy. But he doesn't have his beloved wife anymore. And his son is not yet married. And so he doesn't have any grandkids. And he feels that he's going to expire himself before much longer. So he's feeling kind of down. So Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he had, put your hand under my thigh, that I may make you swear by he who is the God of heaven, the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my sons from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. So as I was kind of wrapping up last session, I was saying that this ceremony of sliding his palm underneath Abraham's thigh, think about up his upper thigh, lower than his buttocks, but right underneath his thigh, because Abraham seems to be laying in bed or maybe sitting up in a chair. And so by sliding his palm underneath that portion of Abraham's anatomy, it is close to, but not touching, the procreative parts of Abraham's body. And so he's basically having this servant swear by the family jewels. That's the way we would put it. And we see this in a little bit in the Latin that comes much later in history, where a promise made by oath is related to the word testes, which is also another name for the genitive sexual components of a male. So this is a matter of keeping the family line going. And so it expects a very serious promise. And so that's what he extracts from this man. Possibly Eliezer, but not necessarily. So number one on the list is, don't you dare let him marry Canaanites. Don't you do it. Now why? Not because of their gene pool, even though they are Hamites while he is a Shemite. It's got everything to do with religion. the people around Abraham, for the most part, worship other gods and goddesses. And Abraham doesn't want his son marrying outside their faith. So, he continues in verse 4, but that you will go to my country, my home country, you know, Ur of the Chaldees, Haran, which is right near Ur of the Chaldees, to my kindred, his brother Nahor's family, and take a wife for my son Yitzhak. Now, why go to that family? Because when Abraham left there 60-some years ago, his brother Nahor also believed in God Most High, in El Shaddai, the Creator God. And so this is a matter of marrying in the faith. Abraham is positive that any daughter, or granddaughter in this case, of his brother Nahor, that is of marriageable age, will have been raised to believe in the same God that Yitzhak has been raised to believe in. So that's the point. That's the reason. So the servant said to him, well, perhaps the woman may not be willing to follow me to this land. One of the things that needs to be understood is that while families have a vested interest in making marital betrothal covenants, the woman is always supposed to go along with it, agree to it, not be forced into it. That was the intention of this little comment by the servant, is what if she herself says that she doesn't want to come down here and leave her family, so she won't agree to it. Continuing, must I then take your son back to that land from which you came? So should I take him up there to marry into that family since she doesn't want to come down here? And so Abraham said to him, see to it that you do not take my son back there. Now, Yitzhak has never been there. Canaan is the country of his birth. But Abraham left Haran, left Ur of the Chaldees, to come to what God said was going to be the land of his future descendants, the promised land. So Abraham says, no, I don't want him leaving the promised land. I want him to stay right here. So, verse number 7, he who is, remember that that's Abraham, excuse me, that's Moses putting the divine name from later into the text to help his readers. It's probably El Shaddai or El Elyon, God Most High, or God of my chest, my God. So, he who is the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, and who spoke to me and swore to me, to your seed I will give this land, he will send his angel before you, his messenger, his supernatural messenger. Pay attention to that. And you shall take a wife for my son from there. But if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be free from this oath of mine, only you must not take my son back there. So the agreement was this, or the directives were this. You go up there and you contract with my family for a wife from my family that can marry my son, but she needs to come here to do that. If she won't, don't you dare take my son up there. Just don't follow through with anything. Now, when he talks about this, it is again as if Abraham doesn't believe he will live long enough to see all this happen. He doesn't go on the trip himself to make sure it's taken care of. It's about a 2-week trip there, and it'd be 2 weeks back. And so apparently he does not feel up to it at this point. to do such physical things. He seems to think that he might not even live long enough for it all to happen. All that he cares about is, make sure my son marries into the faith. And so the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. So now we have the oath, the swearing upon the family line, that I will get your son a wife from the faith of your family. So the servant took 10 of his master's camels, and he departed, taking all sorts of choice gifts from his master, and he arose, and he went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. Now, we have in our our English Standard Version here, Mesopotamia, which is the land between the rivers. That's a Greek name for it. The rivers in mind here are the Euphrates and the Tigris. The Hebrew actually has Aram Naharaim, which is the much more ancient name for this region. And it's most specifically the Baalik watershed that feeds into the Euphrates. And that watershed has the authentic Ur of the Chaldees up at the most northern end of it, and then just about 25 miles or so south of Sanli Urfa, there is Haran, which is the city of Nahor. That's where Nahor lives. That is where Abraham's father Terah died and was buried. So that's where this servant is going. He knew where he was going to and the family that he's looking for. Verse 11, and like I said, it takes about 2 weeks for this camel train to make its way. And you should think that this guy is probably surrounded by a whole bunch of Abraham's most trusted servants, because you're going to need a couple of people taking care of the camels, and then people that are going to be taking care of donkeys and other things that have the tents and the food supplies and stuff like that that they'll need when they set up camp every single night whenever they travel. There'll probably be some security personnel as well. So this is a pretty good group. Now, the camels, though, are carrying dowry, presents, both to the woman that agrees to marry Yitzhak, the heir of all of Abraham's material possessions, but also presents to her family that will have to say goodbye to her. So these camels are carrying a lot of valuables. And so that's why I say there's probably also security force. So, verse 11, he, the servant, made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at the time of evening, the time when women go out to draw water. So he arrives shortly before the sun goes down, has the camels kneel down like they do at the end of every day, where they're getting ready to take the packs off so that the camels can have a good night's rest for the next day's travel. But they also need to be watered. So that's why he's making them stop by the well. This well is just outside the city gates. And apparently the habit was for the ladies of the households to come out and get their evening and early morning water supply at the end of the day. Verse 12. So he, the servant, said, "Oh, he who is," or El Shaddai, or El Elyon, "God of my master Abraham." And I get the impression that this man also is a believer. "Please grant me success today, and show steadfast love to my master Abraham." Now remember, Abraham told him, "You are going on this mission for me, but I am going to pray to God, God Most High, my God, and He is going to send you a supernatural escort, an angel. And He will watch over you, and He will guide you. And so this man decides to pray to the God of Abraham and say, I need some help here. I need some clear-cut indicators about which lady I should pick. Because a lot of these ladies are probably related to the family of Nahor. Verse number 13, Behold, I am standing by the spring of water. The daughters of the men of the city, they're coming out to draw water. Let the young woman to whom I say, Please let down your jar that I may drink, and who shall say, Drink, and I'll water your camels. Let her be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Yitzhak. By this I shall know that you have shown steadfast love to my master. So the man says, I need a miracle. And he definitely does, because you have to understand what he's asking for here. The adult camel that is used for pack travel here can drink as much as 30 gallons of water in just a few minutes after it's been working all day. He's got 10 of them. So we're talking about the potential of 300 gallons of water being needed for these camels. And everybody knows how much a camel can drink. And so this man is going to say to random women coming out of the gate, coming to the well, Can I have a drink of water, please? Just asking for themselves. That would be an easy task, you know, just tip it over and let the person, you know, get a cup full of water. Not a big deal at all. Almost any woman would do that. But this guy says, I want her to volunteer to water the camels. Now, who in their right mind would volunteer to hand dip 300 gallons of water for thirsty camels? Do you understand how long that's going to take? Imagine a 5-gallon bucket being your implement. Do you know how long it would take? It would take you well over an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, to hand dip with a 5-gallon bucket 300 gallons of water. That's what this guy is asking for. He's asking for a miracle, that someone would volunteer to do that. Now, verse 15, here comes the miracle. Before he had finished speaking, you know, he hadn't even signed off with amen. Before he'd finished speaking, behold, Rebecca, who was born to Bethuel, the son of Milcah and the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother. So we already saw their genealogy earlier. So here she is, a young unmarried lady. Perhaps she's in her 20s. She is the granddaughter and therefore the grandniece of Abraham, the granddaughter of his brother. She comes out with her water jar on her shoulder. So she's coming out here with a water pot that probably holds maybe 4 or 5 gallons. She's going to get that much and then take it back in so that they've got water through the night and then first thing in the morning. That was her task. That was her job. Well, this young woman was very attractive in appearance. Every once in a while, we are reminded that members of this family are well-proportioned and striking in their features. Nobody quite understands how it works, but there are certain genetic features that make people, men, women, a knockout. And so that's where she is, and the description in the language indicates that. So she is a maiden whom no man had known. So she is not just simply single, she is very clearly a virgin. And she's apparently not betrothed either. She went down to the spring, filled her jar, and came up. Now, I want you to pay attention to the language there. She didn't let it down by a rope. It says she went down to the spring, filled her jar, and came up. So that tells us that this is one of those wells that you take steps, walk down into the area where the water level is, and then you walk back out again. We have examples of these throughout the Middle East. It's got little steps along the edges. You get down to the water level, dip, and then walk back up a different set. So she goes down, gets her own water, comes back up. Then the servant ran to meet her and said, "Please give me a little water to drink from your jar." So all he asked for is a small drink. Maybe he's got his little cup there. Easy enough to do. She said back to him, "Drink, my lord." "Oh, yes, sir. Here, have a drink." And she quickly let down her jar upon her hand and gave him a drink. And when she had finished giving him a drink, she then said of her own free will, I put that part in there to emphasize, "I'll draw water for your camels also until they've finished drinking." So she quickly emptied her jar into the trough, and then she ran again to the well to draw water, and she drew for all his camels. Now think about that. She just volunteered to satisfy the thirsts of 10 camels. And she's only got a jar that probably holds 4 to 5 gallons of water. And so she runs down and back, and down and back, down, back, down, back, down, back, down, back. She does that until they've all drunk and are satisfied. And that's a miracle that she would volunteer for that. That is hard work. And so the man, the servant, gazed at her in silence to learn whether he who is had prospered his journey or not. Now remember, his prayer is very specific. Not only does she have to volunteer to water the camels until they're satisfied, she has to finish the job. And so that's what he's waiting for. He's waiting to see whether or not she will follow through with what she offered. Now, who would blame her if, you know, half an hour into this project, she would go, "I'm sorry, sir, but I've got other things I got to take care of at home. I hope that I've helped you out enough by bringing this much water up. Have a good day." And then she'd go. Who would blame her for that? After all, she volunteered. But this man is looking to see if she finishes what he asked for miraculously. And she does. Verse 22, when the camels had finished drinking, which means she's brought enough water up that the camels have turned away from the water trough and gone over and kneeled back down again and probably started paying attention more to some fodder, some food. So they're satisfied. So when the camels had finished drinking, the man took a gold ring weighing a half shekel. So not very much. It's like 11 grams. It'd be a small ring, but still very expensive in a gift. It's a nose ring, by the way, just so you'll know, because that'll come up later. So he gave her this gold nose ring and 2 bracelets for her arm weighing 10 gold shekels. So little bangles to go on her arms to say thank you. But maybe a little bit more than that. Because you also can give gold rings to women as part of the betrothal ceremony. And we'll kind of see that later. And then he said, please tell me, whose daughter are you? Is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night? And she said to him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor. So she tells him her immediate family tree, which means that he can identify her as a relative of Abraham with those words. She added, oh yeah, we have plenty of both straw and fodder and room to spend the night. And so the man bowed his head and worshiped he who is. So he takes a moment to say thank you to God. And then he said, blessed be he who is, or more likely, El Elyon or El Shaddai, the God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his steadfast love and his faithfulness toward my master. As for me, he who is has led me in the way to the house of my master's kinsman. And then the young woman ran and told her mother's household about these things. So once he gives her the presents, which probably came as a big surprise to her, he then blesses the God of Abraham, which she might actually recognize that name because it might be part of the family stories about how her grandfather's brother left and went south. And so she recognizes all that, and now she needs to go and make arrangements for her family to provide hospitality to this visiting representative of a very wealthy man. And so when we come back together next session, we will meet another character from a very future important story as well.